You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1958, commercial and fine art photographer David Addy was commissioned to take photos of some of the more famous people of the day, but the negatives were never printed, and when he died in 1982, Mr. Addy remained relatively unknown. But that's changing now due to the efforts of his son, Eli Addy, who discovered these images decades later, and many of them are currently on display at the Brooklyn Historical Society in an exhibit called Truman Capote's Brooklyn. I'm pleased to welcome Eli Addy to our show now to talk about that work and about his own career as an assistant to Bill Clinton, a speechwriter for Al Gore, and a contributor to television shows like The West Wing and House MD. Welcome to our show.
It's a great pleasure.
Did your father share his work with you while you were growing up?
Well, he did. I mean, he died when I was very young, but he worked at home. He had a photo studio, actually, on the first floor of the brownstone I grew up in and two darkrooms in the house. So I feel like my whole childhood, I was in the darkroom with him, my brother as well, looking at prints, photographed. I was a model test as my brother. I was a sort of a test model for any shoot he had coming up. So I feel like my early life was all about his photography in some ways.
And why weren't these photos printed? Some of them remain in undeveloped rolls.
Yeah, well, they were not undeveloped rolls, but they were negatives in envelopes that had never been printed in any way and probably never seen by anybody other than him.
It's with intriguing labels on them.
This is right. My father, who was a steadily working commercial photographer for about 25 years before he died, he had a weird filing system where he would file the negatives by client. So it made it very difficult going through his archive to find anything interesting or notable. But it's an interesting thing because the very first job he ever got when he took a course in photography from a well-known art director named Alexei Brodovich, his big break basically was Brodovich hired him to illustrate Breakfast at Tiffany's with photo montages for Harper's Bazaar. And he did all this work, and Harper's Bazaar refused to publish Breakfast at Tiffany's at the last minute because they thought it was smutty and they didn't like the language. And Capote changed the language for them and they still wouldn't publish it. And so a single photograph of my father's ran in Esquire when Breakfast at Tiffany's first ran. And then he did this other assignment where he illustrated this wonderful essay Capote wrote about his life in Brooklyn Heights in Holiday Magazine, which ran in 59, which included great portraits of Capote, as you mentioned, that had never been seen, most never printed, and tons of amazing street photographs of Brooklyn. But my only guess, because I never heard about Truman Capote, I never knew they met, that he had photographed him, and Capote was so famous my whole childhood, I can only guess that there was heartbreak by my father that this early Tiffany's assignment mostly had been junked. It's the only theory I have.
Weren't some of the images in this exhibit published for the first time in a new edition of Capote's Brooklyn?
Yes, that's right. As I was going through my father's archive and trying to get attention for the work of this long-dead photographer, you know, I was just gathering pictures of famous people that he had taken, which wasn't really the majority of his work, to try to get interest. I sent these pictures of Capote through a website link to this small publisher, the Little Book Room, that had published that essay of Capote's in book form with no photographs, and they immediately said, let's do a book of these. It came out in November. It's so wonderful and amazing that we got a book of my dad's work out.
Now, one would assume that you just inherited all these negatives, but didn't unearthing your father's work begin with a Google search?
Yes, that's right.
I guess that's the way we start with so many things.
Nowadays, it definitely is. It's funny, I'm a screenwriter and a television writer, as you mentioned, which means I mostly try to avoid writing. And I can kind of remember the afternoon that I was sitting trying to not write some script in particular, probably an episode of House, and I just Googled my father's name, and I don't think I'd ever really done that before. And so little popped up, almost nothing popped up. And one of the few things that did, and it bothered me, by the way, that he was somebody who photographed some notable people, Leonard Bernstein, Lorraine Hansberry.
W.E.B. Du Bois.
W.E.B. Du Bois, which I didn't even know at the time. But even though he wasn't a famous name, he was a steadily working magazine photographer, basically, in his life. But this one page came up with, he had been a commercial illustrator before he was a photographer and drawn advertisements, cigarette ads, the kinds of things you would see on Mad Men, the covers of pulpy novels in the 40s and 50s, actually. And this one website came up that was sort of about mid-century, I guess, illustration, and had a couple drawings of his and basically said, and for now, that's all we know about David Addy. And, you know, as his son, it's a heartbreaking thing to read. And so I put a little post, you could comment on the page, and I said, actually, I'm a relative of his. And he went on to have a great career in photography. Thank you very much. And I just signed it Eli. And some this guy in England named Brian Homer, who's a photographer and had been influenced by some of my father's later work, which came out in a book in the 70s when he was alive, he found me on Twitter. He just guessed that Eli, direct relative, was Eli Addy, and I have a Twitter account, and he sent me a direct message saying, I want to help you get your father's work seen again. And my first reaction was, why didn't I ever think of that? Mm-hmm. I still don't know the answer.
So you found the negatives. And some of them had rather intriguing labels on them. You probably knew from those labels that there was exciting stuff to be found there. But did you just do the usual thing, contact sheets, and figure out which ones were the most interesting?
Well, you know, it's funny because I as I look back on when I started this a few years ago, I knew so little and I was so disorganized. And he was so disorganized. His filing system was so bizarre. But, you know, I started by taking, which is really stupid in retrospect for anybody who wants to revive the work of a photographer. You know, my mother still lives in the brownstone where I grew up and where my parents lived and worked. She's a wonderful painter, Dottie Addy. And I just wandered around her house one day after meeting with this guy from England. He flew to New York. We went through some of the negatives just to find these kind of Russian self-portraits that he was interested in, very specific body of work. But I started thinking, there's more here that's interesting, and maybe I can do something with it. And I took bad, probably out-of-focus iPhone photographs of some framed photographs on my mother's wall, which didn't have anything notable in them. And I thought, well, I think these are great. And I sent them to some gallerists, and a couple people gave me names of people. And if anybody responded to me, it was with a curt, mean note, saying, I can't help you at all.
Unless you have photos of famous people.
Well, I was getting such a wall of resistance, and you know, I wrote this in the afterword to the book. I mean, I've worked in national politics and in Hollywood, and at least in those two places, people will reject you over coffee. Hmm. I found the art world to be the meanest, coldest place I've ever encountered. I have to say, there was almost nobody willing to really take the time and help me or give me advice. I wasn't looking for like a one-man show at the, you know, Guggenheim or anything. But so what happened was a friend of mine knew a famous rock photographer and asked her to talk to me on the phone. And she said, look, you just have to gather the pictures your father took of famous people. It's all anyone's going to care about. It's your only way to revive his work. And I immediately went through these dusty wooden boxes of negatives, just looking at every envelope to see what they said. And there probably are people in there that aren't labeled, but there was one envelope that said, Holiday Capote, 1958. Hmm. And it's a miracle that it said Capote. It probably should have just said Holiday, given his filing system. And I just took that and brought it back to L.A. with me, actually, and had these negatives printed. And these are pictures that were never published and really just about never seen. And they're the most amazing portraits of Truman Capote. I mean, they're jaw-dropping, I think. And your listeners can, I think some of them might even be on the WNYC website. Why they were never seen is a whole other mystery unto itself.
And how did this exhibit come together? You found those pictures. And Truman Capote, of course, was known to have lived in downtown Brooklyn for quite a while.
That's right.
So it was of interest to people who want to know more about Brooklyn history?
Yeah. I mean, what actually happened was when the idea for this book came about, it went through the wonderful publisher and editor of The Little Book Room, Angela Hederman. She was the one who said, let's do a basic coffee table book. We'll have this Capote essay, which is an essay that was always one of Capote's favorite essays of his own, just about his life in Brooklyn Heights, which is, by the way, a lot of people don't know this. It's where he did all his great work. Breakfast at Tiffany's, In Cold Blood, all of his great early journalism was written when he lived in this house in Brooklyn Heights at 70 Willow Street.
There were a whole bunch of famous writers who lived there, and even Gypsy Rose Lee.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that. But Norman Mailer lived there for a while. I think Arthur Miller lived there for a while. W.B. Du Bois, in fact, I think ended up living in the house Arthur Miller had lived in before, if I'm not misremembering. But it was an incredible little literary enclave. But so the book came out and did so much better than I ever imagined. I mean, it actually sold and got some great write-ups. And so we did a book launch event at the Powerhouse Arena in Dumbo, and somebody from the Brooklyn Historical Society was there. I'm not sure why they were there, but they sort of approached me that night and then followed up with an email just saying we'd like to do a show.
And the show is running a long time until July of next year. Truman Capote's Brooklyn, The Lost Photographs of David Addy. It's at the Brooklyn Historical Society, 128 Pierpont Street. And if you want more information about it, go to our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. You'll also find some images from the show there.
It's an incredible show, which I can say because I didn't put it together at all. But Deborah Schwartz and Marcia Ely at the Brooklyn Historical Society, they combined some vintage prints of my father's from that time that we found, including some of the unpublished Breakfast at Tiffany's montages that he did. They got letters that Truman Capote wrote that talk about my father. And actually one expresses his anger to Esquire that they're using so little of my father's work. And he says to Esquire, which I couldn't even speak for hours after reading this letter, that he told Esquire they could only have Breakfast at Tiffany's if they used my father's work. And he was upset they were using so little of it. And there's newly discovered prints, and it's a wonderful show.
Coming from a family of artists, how did you wind up in politics?
It's a funny thing because Mike's broader family includes a lot of research scientists and a fair number of artists. And obviously both my parents are artists. And for a while, working in politics, I was wearing a dark suit and a tie 7 days a week at one point, and I really felt like the black sheep in the family. But it's hard to know. You know, both my parents are very political and passionate partisan Democrats and always talked about politics at the dinner table. So I think I always was just interested in it and gravitated toward it.
One of the most probably sad moments was when you co-wrote Al Gore's famous concession speech during the 2000 election.
Yeah, I guess sad is one word. It was a bit of an out-of-body experience. I mean, I think after the Florida recount, and we made so many tactical errors in and during the recount, but so little of that time did I or we think that we were going to pull it out. So it was a little bit like the terminal cancer patient ended up dying.
Some people felt he should have continued to fight because the Supreme Court decision, well, in fact, Sandra Day O'Connor has talked about regretting that decision.
I mean, I will say this, I don't know that we really had any legal recourse to go forward after the court decision, but I think the huge error that, you know, we made at the time, that the Gore team made at the time, was that we didn't fight as aggressively for every vote in Florida as we could have or as the Republicans did. For example, those butterfly ballots, the infamous butterfly ballots in Palm Beach, we never fought those. And that was about 10,000 votes that mistakenly went to Pat Buchanan from, you know, elderly Jewish Holocaust survivors that, you know, definitely weren't intending to vote for Pat Buchanan. But I think that at the time, we thought the public's patience for this is going to be limited, you know, because W. Bush was illegitimately, you know, declared the victor on election night by all the networks for at least a short period. He had the presumption of victory. We were going to look like sore losers. We wanted to seem reasonable. I think if we could go back and do it over, we'd be much more aggressive.
Did your experience as a speechwriter get you the job on the West Wing?
Yeah, 100%. I'd never written a line of dialogue. I'd never written a script. Somebody jokingly suggested, because I had no idea what to do with my life, well, you're a speechwriter, you should sell out and become a screenwriter. And I thought to myself, yeah, how different could that be? It's 1,000% different. They almost have nothing in common. But I just got the idea, and I had barely seen the show at that point myself, but I got the idea to reach out myself to the West Wing and got on the phone with Aaron Sorkin, who took a huge flyer on me, which I'm grateful for.
Still, you must have been brought a lot of stories with you from your experiences with Al Gore and Bill Clinton.
I did, and the West Wing had already been on the air for 2 seasons, and everything great about it, you know, predated my joining the show. But I think even though they'd had a lot of consultants in politics, there had been a full-time writer who'd actually worked in the White House, and so I was a kind of a fountain of acronyms, and I loved the show and the job so much that I just wanted to move in there, and it was a wonderful time for me. And I was able to offer a lot of value as I was learning the craft and able to step up and actually become a writer on the show.
And it doesn't hurt to be mentored by Aaron Sorkin.
It does not. It does not. He's allergic to cliches. He's the Mozart of screenwriting and television writing, and still a dear friend.
What are you writing these days?
Well, at the moment, I'm doing a couple things. I'm working as a writer and a producer on a TV show that premieres Thursday on the Fox Network called Pitch. That's actually about the first woman in Major League Baseball, and it's a great show, and I'm having a great time. But anybody who knows me laughs when I tell them about it because I don't know anything about sports. But I think it'll be a lot of fun. And I'm also I'm sort of in a bit of a development deal with Fox, and so I'm working on an idea for a TV show of my own.
You don't miss politics?
Well, it's still there, so it's all around me. I don't have the chance to miss it. I follow it with a level of crazy obsession that I'm not proud of, and still talk to all my old political friends, and still get a deep pit in my stomach whenever red states and blue states are thrown on a TV screen.
What about your father's work? There still must be lots of negatives that have never been printed. Are there plans for doing more exhibits?
You know
that your father has finally, you finally have gotten him the recognition you'd hoped to get him?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I don't know if I've gotten him the recognition I hope to get him, because I feel it's so personal to me. Anybody who, in a way that I don't feel about myself or my own work, anybody who praises his work, I want to hug and kiss them. And anybody who says anything that slights it in the smallest way, I feel sort of hurt by it. So I don't think he'll have the recognition he deserves until he does have a one-man show at the Guggenheim. You know, I would love for there to be tons of books and exhibits. So I'm doing everything I can in and around my other time constraints, but I found a lot of incredible things already, and Getty Images has some of those things on their website. These W.B. Du Bois pictures, Leonard Bernstein, Lieber and Stoller, Lorraine Hansberry, Ralph Ellison.
Did I see the band as well?
Yes, the band. He took incredible studio portraits of the band, I think in their rehearsal space in Saugerties, New York, and the band didn't really pose for studio portraits, and they're incredible, and you can find that stuff online. But this is the interesting thing. The Du Bois pictures were not labeled in any way and were just in some thick envelopes of negatives of street photography of Brooklyn. So what, you know, I've gone through 0.001% of these negatives, and just based on what seemed to be intriguing envelope descriptions, you know. So I need to go through much more. I plan to, because who knows what's in there? I mean, I think there's 10 books in there.
Meanwhile, listeners can see some of the images from this show on our show page at wmyc.org/Lopate. It runs through July 2017 at the Brooklyn Historical Society, 128 Pierpont Street in downtown Brooklyn. The show is called Truman Capote's Brooklyn, The Lost Photographs of David Addy. My great thanks to Eli Addy for being on our show.
It's a tremendous pleasure.